It is Chester's D Radio with Madonna, Don't Tell Me. I'm going to tell you that Claire Shields is here. She's a solicitor in the Wills and Probate Department at Oliver & Co. And here she is. Morning.
Morning, Gavin.
Nice to see you, Claire.
Thanks for having me.
This is a cheery old topic, isn't it? Wills and probate and lasting powers of attorney. It's important stuff, though, isn't it? It's stuff that we don't really want to think about, but we should.
We should. Like we said, it is quite upsetting sometimes, and it can be difficult to discuss, but if people just have a little think about what it is they need to do, whether that's making a will or a lasting power of attorney, give us a call and then hopefully we can help you out with that and reassure you.
It's one of those things that you don't want to think about and you don't really want to do, but I've finally got my will sorted out earlier this year, and it's done. It's quite a quick process, isn't it?
Yeah.
And then you can put it away in a drawer and forget about it for the rest of your life.
Exactly.
Yeah. So that's what we're encouraging people to do. Get it done, get it out of the way, and then forget about it. So we'll come back in a few minutes and we'll talk about the Court of Protection and what a lasting power of attorney is. And then a little bit later we'll talk about wills, why we should make one, how we should go about making one, and the sort of things you can include in it, because you can have all sorts in it if you want.
Yes, you can.
It's interesting stuff. We'll get onto that after In Excess and New Sensation. As you heard a few minutes ago, Claire Shields is here, solicitor in the Wills and Probate Department at Oliver & Co. We're going to be talking about wills, we're going to be talking about lasting powers of attorney. There's no getting away from it, there's going to be a lot of use of the word death in the next few minutes.
Sorry.
We can't help it, we can't get away from that, but it is important that we think about it, as I sort of intimated a few minutes ago. Once it's done, we can forget about it then. Let's start, Claire, if you don't mind, by talking about the Court of Protection, which is, well, you tell us what it is.
Yeah, so we often get clients that come to us because a member of the family typically has lost capacity. And this can be maybe because they've got dementia, but also it's possibly because of some sort of sudden event that's happened in their lives. So, for instance, somebody could have been involved in a car accident or something like that, and now this person has lost capacity completely suddenly, and this person has assets to deal with. So what does the person do? They will come to us and they will ask us for our help, and we will then have to begin an application through the Court of Protection, which means this person is going to be appointed as their deputy, so they can then be formally appointed to deal with the person's finances and property. And this will be because that person has bills to pay, or maybe they need to do something with their pension, or sadly, maybe this person needs to move property, sadly, into care, or maybe to move to a more suitable property whereby they have all the, you know, things they need to help them with their life.
Presumably, if somebody, for example, is married or in a civil partnership, that responsibility will just default to the partner, will it, or not necessarily?
No, because although you may have joint assets, and that would be really helpful, so if everything's owned jointly, then yes, if you're a joint owner of something, you can typically deal with the bank account or something like that. But if you're a joint owner of the property and you need to sell that property, that person is still alive, so that person needs to be part of the sale of their own property, but of course they can't sign any documentation. So even in those circumstances, an application would still be required.
To the Court of Protection, and a decision will be made there as to who has that responsibility.
Yes.
This sounds like quite a complicated, long drawn out process at a time that's obviously going to be difficult for the people involved anyway.
Yeah, I mean, it's awful having to see families go through such a difficult time. Like I say, if it's a sudden incident that's happened, and families are just, you know, left in turmoil, their lives have been turned upside down, and they're now having to go through a very lengthy process with the court and deal with quite complicated application forms and obviously pay for it as well. And of course they can come and see us and we can take that side of things away from them. Even though it will still take a long time, we can take that burden off them.
Yeah.
So they can just get on with looking after their loved one.
The way to avoid this is to set up a lasting power of attorney, which I guess most people who do it are getting on in years, shall we say, and, you know, they know that dementia may sadly be around the corner. It's, you know, very rare, I suppose, that younger people will do it just in case they have a bad car accident or something.
Exactly. I mean, even quite elderly people will say to me, well, I'm okay at the moment,
right.
and that's not the point. They say, oh, well, when that happens, I'll make a lasting power of attorney, and I say, well, you won't be able to do that if you've lost capacity, because you have to have capacity to make a lasting power of attorney.
Which is why we're saying do it. Put it in a drawer, forget about it. It may never be needed, but if it is, it's all there.
Let it be a waste of money. You know, let it be something that you have that's almost forgotten about, really, because once it's done, it is there.
Well, peace of mind is never really a waste of money, is it?
No, absolutely not. And this is what we try and encourage clients to do. So if a client, you know, is asking for advice on a will or probate, you know, we will also try and tell them to think about making a lasting power of attorney. You know, because you can then have that peace of mind, like you say, and should anything awful happen to you, then that document is there and it's ready to use for your attorneys, the people you've appointed, to then use for whatever it is you need to do, such as selling your house.
And as I understand it, there's lasting power of attorney is relevant to financial issues like selling a house, but also to health decisions that might be required.
Correct. So most people are always focused on the practical side of things, like your property, your finances, but you can also put a lasting power of attorney in place for your health and your welfare. So things like what kind of care you'd like if something happened to you. It can go as far as listing your, you know, dietary requirements and preferences and that sort of thing. And it also talks about, again, I'm sorry to go there, but life-sustaining treatment and what your wishes would be in those circumstances.
Yeah, I would imagine most people find a degree of peace once they've finally got round to doing this and got it in place.
Yes, they do. A lot of people come to us in a bit of a state because maybe they've tried to sort of do this themselves and they've made a bit of a mess of the forms and that sort of thing. And then it finally comes through and they are very relieved. And obviously it's all done then. And should anything happen to them, which we hope it won't, they've got that document there ready to go.
And obviously loss of capacity is more of an issue the older you get. So it's some comfort, I suppose, to your children if when that awful time comes and your mum or dad or both sadly lose capacity. As, you know, grown-up children, it's good to know that everything's in place. What your parents wanted, you can get on and do.
Yes, I suppose it is. It's a relief for the people who are named as attorneys on that document.
Because otherwise they'd be involved in this horrible court protection business for ages, wouldn't they?
Yeah. And nobody really wants that because, like I say, you could have something urgent that comes up, like needing to sell a property or, sadly, somebody going into care and people are knocking on the door asking for bills to be paid and you can then pay them because you've got the lasting power of attorney, you're appointed and you can begin what you need to do.
Okay, lovely. So that's for people that are still alive. We're going to move on to people that are not still alive when we talk about wills. I can't think of any other way of putting it. It's the only way we can phrase it. We'll do it. It's important again to get your will written. We'll talk about that after this. Claire Shields is here from the Wills and Probate Department at Oliver & Co. We've talked about the court protection and lasting powers of attorney, which is something people put in place if at the end of their lives they lose capacity. But after somebody's passed away, if there's anything to be left, then a will save an awful lot of problems. Because if you die intestate, well, what happens? First of all, it goes to your spouse if you've got one, doesn't it? Everything you have. If you die intestate.
Correct. Depending on how much money you have at the time. And then it can be split. So there's so much to a spouse, so much to children. But if you've got no spouse, then it's down to children. And then if not, well, then down to grandchildren, if not back up to parents. And it sort of goes up and down and then across to siblings and so on and so forth. And that may be what you would like to happen. But do you want your next of kin or next of kin as your executor? Or would you like to appoint somebody in particular? One of the things that has happened in cases in the past is that someone's died intestate with a child who was under 18 at the time of the death, and the child's mother ended up being the administrator of this man's estate, and He would not have wanted that. He would have wanted a member of his own family to have dealt with it. But because it was an intestacy, he hadn't made a will, that was what happened. So, yes, you will probably want to leave your children assets, but you may want to pick an alternative executor. So that's why it's important to make a will. But obviously there are several reasons why, you know, exactly who you want to go in your will should be there. And then if something happens to them, who else after them?
Yeah.
So on and so forth.
Well, I mean, I think it's, you know, it's probably sensible, isn't it, to make one. And if you've spent all your life working and, you know, you're leaving a wedge of cash or some property that will be sold and obviously monetized, it would be nice to know that it's going where you want it to go when you have no use for it anymore.
Yes, and often people actually don't have any family. So some people, you know, when you talk to them and they say, well, I don't have children, I don't have siblings, I don't have parents anymore. So, you know, they are the ones that need to make wills so they can name friends or charities, for instance, and then other people may not be married, so they need to think about what would happen to their partner if they didn't make a will. So there are many, many reasons why you should make a will, or at least think about making a will.
And then when you've thought about it, give you a call.
Exactly.
And actually do it.
Yes.
It's not just financial matters that can be covered in a will, though, is it? It's, for example, you know, guardianship of children. If you, you know, if you've got children that are under 16, would it be, or 18?
Under 18.
Under 18.
So, yes, if a person doesn't necessarily have a lot of money, they may think, well, there's no point in making a will. But actually, you can appoint guardians of your children in a will as well. So that's something really important to think about. Because if something happened to you, who would look after those children? Do they have another parent, or is it just you and your children? And if so, you need to really get that in writing so that there's something formal there.
And your pets as well.
Yes, you can include pets. So you could say who you want to look after your pets, and you could maybe add a nice little incentive for the people who look after your pets in a will too.
Now, what's the process when somebody has died and they were your client and you're holding a copy of their will? What you get notified of the death, presumably by a next of kin, or maybe the executor. What happens then?
So then what normally happens is we will arrange some sort of meeting with the next of kin to get them in to maybe go through the will, talk about the next steps. If that person is the executor, then we will potentially deal with the estate for that person to take that burden off them. Or if they're just a beneficiary, it may be the case that we're the executors of the estate, so we will handle things from there. But the idea is that we take that burden off people and we deal with the estate, you know, regardless of the complexity.
And does it all go fairly smoothly most of the time?
It can do. Sometimes there are family disputes, for instance, or missing beneficiaries, or sometimes there's some difficulty in locating assets, but we always get there in the end.
What if, say, a will was made 30 years previously and, you know, a lot of the people mentioned in the will perhaps have moved to a different address, they might be difficult to track down. Where is the onus? Is that on you as the solicitor, or is it on the executor?
It is on the executor, but obviously if we're instructed, then we're taking that responsibility to do those sorts of things. So it can be quite an interesting part of the job, actually, which is finding those beneficiaries, working out what happened to them. And there usually is some sort of trail for each individual, unless they've left the country and gone to live in a tribal existence somewhere that we don't know about.
Right.
You know, we've not had one yet.
Normally,
been located.
Do your detective work. You can track down all the beneficiaries named in any will.
Yeah.
Might just take some time. So the advice, I suppose, is get it done. Put it in a drawer and forget about it, and you'll have peace of mind then, knowing that when you're not here anymore, your wishes will be honoured. Because I know wills can be challenged, but there has to be grounds, doesn't there? Like strong grounds to challenge a will.
Yes, there does. Sometimes that happens. You've probably seen maybe in the media where there are big cases where a lot of money is spent over a dispute in a will, and ideally you want to avoid that. Sometimes it is impossible because the parties just cannot agree on a solution, but ideally, like I say, you want to avoid any dispute because it is going to cost a lot of money.
Because in the will that, you know, person A gets 20% and person B gets 40%, that should be the end of it. Person A shouldn't be scrapping with person B for an extra 10%.
Yeah, I mean, there is something called testamentary freedom.
I thought there might be.
In this country. So you are allowed to do what you want to do, but within reason. So you could challenge a will because you're a dependent of the person who's died, and therefore you should be getting more or at least something from that estate. So there's all sorts of reasons why it may not work out quite how you've put it in your will.
Okay, that's maybe think of something else then. What if you specifically wanted to exclude somebody, perhaps quite a close member of your family, but you specifically wanted to exclude them for whatever reason? If you made that specification clear in the will, would that make overturning it more difficult?
Possibly. You can put something in the will to exclude a person. We would also recommend that you do what we call a letter of wishes. But ultimately, you wouldn't know exactly what's going to happen until you've died, which of course then you won't know anything. And then it just is there to be seen as to whether somebody would challenge that will. And if it goes to court, then it has to be battled out, I'm afraid.
I guess that's rare, though, isn't it?
Yes, it is quite rare.
So pretty much when you've written a will, what you've written in that will is what is going to happen after you've left us.
Hopefully.
Yeah, great. There's never a black or white answer, is there, with law? It's always a shade
not
of grey
really.
At some point. Well, it's been fascinating talking to you, it really has. It is, you know, an interesting topic, and, you know, even though we have used the D word quite a lot, it's unavoidable when talking about wills and so on. It's one of those things, as I keep saying, get it done, put it away, it's sorted then, isn't it? You can get on with living your life.
Exactly.
Well, it's been great to talk to you. Thank you very much, Claire.
Thank you.
We can get in touch with you, Oliver and Co. How?
Well, by the website, so search online for us or use oliverandco.co.uk or give us a call on 01244 312 306.
Lovely.